Hi, and welcome to the Magazine Rack on Chris. I'm Rick Gray. Today I'll be reading from the March edition of Remind Magazine. Our first articles will deal with miniseries in the past. And to lead into that subject, I'm going to read a letter from Robert Edelstein, the Remind editor. I can't recall too many instances of television watching that felt as stressful as the final moments of Roots, The Next Generations, which aired the night of February 24, 1979. 2 years earlier, the original eight-parter introduced us to West African Kunta Kinte, played by LeVar Burton in his breakout role, who left his village to cut a tree to make himself a drum and was never heard from again after being enslaved by traders. Of course, in the United States, his story was told with extraordinary detail by his descendant, writer Alex Haley. Ours was one of 36 million U.S. households who tuned in to the finale, still one of the most watched programs ever. The Next Generations moved the story toward the present, with the writer Haley, played by James Earl Jones, looking to prove his worth to his hypercritical father, played by Dorian Harewood. He did get that nod of praise, a subplot I had been rooting interest in. At the time, I was a freshman in college in Albany, New York, a would-be writer looking for approval myself from a seemingly judgmental dad. But it was Haley's visit to a village in Gambia that had me on the edge of my seat. Haley listened for hours as the native historian spooled out the village's entire tale through oral traditions and was half asleep when the man got around to Kunta Kinte. The mention startled Haley, who rose with joy. "You old African," he shouted. "I found you. Kunta Kinte, I found you." By then, I'd already known what the miniseries could do, long before the word binge had meaning beyond nights consuming too much pizza. The form brought a new continuity of story to American television that we're still enjoying today. We hope this package reacquaints you with classics you remember and perhaps nights of family viewing. The first article is by Matt Rausch. 15 Greatest Miniseries. The 70s and 80s produced a TV era of lush, sweeping, limited series, and these were the best. Here's the thing about appointment TV. Back in the day, you really had to be there. The phenomenon reached its peak during the glory days of the classic miniseries, those sprawling made-for-TV epics from the 1970s and 80s that drew you back to the set night after consecutive night, defying the structures of weekly programming. The medium had never experienced storytelling with such scope, often excessively programmed during the so-called sweeps months to spike viewership. Glamorous casts with marquee stars, history writ large, in big-budget productions, the latest juicy bestseller prompting the question, "Have you seen a good book lately?" The miniseries was, simply put, maximum television. Here is a ranked listing of some of the most significant and beloved miniseries that defined the genre and were often the most popular programs of any given year. Number 1, Roots, from January 23rd to 30th, 1977. There was plenty of irony in ABC scheduling this groundbreaking series over eight consecutive nights right before the February sweeps because network execs were worried audiences would reject a grueling saga about the cruelties of slavery based on Alex Haley's acclaimed novel. Of course, the opposite ensued, and a new trend was born after America was riveted to the multi-generational tale of Kunta Kinte, played by LeVar Burton as a youth, John Amos as an adult, who was kidnapped from Africa into slavery and who never stopped yearning for freedom. With career-establishing roles for Louis Gossett Jr. as Fiddler, Ben Vereen as Chicken George, and George Stanford Brown as Torn Harvey, Roots was also notable for casting popular white TV stars, including Ed Lugrant Asner, Lorne Ben Cartwright Green, and Robert Mike Brady Reed as slave traders and owners. Roots broke ratings records of the time, averaging 80 million viewers during the week's run. And it inevitably spawned sequels, including 1979's Roots: The Next Generations, with James Earl Jones as Haley, who travels to Africa to connect to his, what else, roots. A remake was filmed in 2016, but nothing could match the impact of the original. The second series was Lonesome Dove, which appeared from February 5th to 8th, 1989. By the late 1880s, the TV Western was considered dead. But over four enthralling nights, a robust adaptation of Larry McMurtry's Pulitzer Prize-winning novel reminded viewers of the genre's enduring appeal. Centered around an eventful and often tragic cattle drive from the dusty title town to the plains of Montana, Lonesome Dove is blessed by the chemistry of Robert Duvall, the irrepressible Gus McRae, and Tommy Lee Jones as the taciturn Woodrow F. Call, as former Texas Rangers seeking and finding late-in-life excitement. Their entourage included Danny Glover as their former scout, Ricky Schroeder as young Newt, Call's unacknowledged bastard son, and Diane Lane as a winsome prostitute. The moving finale is famous for making grown men weep. Less famous are the sequels and prequels that followed, including a weekly series in 1994-96. Number three was The Thornbirds, which ran from March 27th to 30th, 1983. Second only to Roots among miniseries and overall audience ratings, the four-part romance, based on Colleen McCullough's bestseller, confirmed Richard Chamberlain's claim as king of the miniseries. He was in his element as ambitious and oh-so-handsome priest Ralph de Bricassart, forever hot under the collar for headstrong Australian lass Maggie Cleary, played by Rachel Ward, as he rises through the church ranks thanks to a bequest from Maggie's lustful Aunt Mary, played by Emmy winner Barbara Stanwyck. The third episode, with viewers avidly witnessing Father Ralph and Maggie succumbing to their passion on a remote island, understandably drew the largest audience. The United States Catholic Conference was not amused that this steamy series aired during Holy Week. Number four was Rich Man, Poor Man, which ran from February 1st to March 15th, 1976. Popularizing the novel-for-television concept, airing its 12 compelling chapters in weekly installments rather than over a single week, Rich Man, Poor Man, based on Irwin Shaw's novel, was a soapy sensation, catapulting Nick Nolte into stardom as black sheep brother Tom Jordache, an underdog blue-collar boxer whose life is a marked contrast to that of Rich Man, brother Rudy, played by Peter Strauss, as a successful entrepreneur, eventually entering the political arena. Nolte, Strauss, and Susan Blakely, she played Rudy's lifelong gal, Judy Prescott, were all nominated for an Emmy. William Smith had a breakout performance as a family's dangerous nemesis, Falconetti, and Ed Asner walked away with an Emmy for his role as the brother's father. A book too followed, but it wasn't the same without Nolte. Number five, The Winds of War and War of Remembrance, which played from February 6th to 13th, 83, November 13th to 23rd, 1988, and May 7th to 14th, 1989. It doesn't get much more epic than this double whammy of a historical drama, bringing Herman Wouk's doorstop World War II novels to TV. Airing over a combined 48 hours, 18 for Winds, 30 for Remembrance, which was scheduled in two halves separated by 6 months, This ambitious project from Dark Shadows creator Dan Curtis followed the family of Naval Officer Victor Pug Henry, played by Robert Mitchum, from the build-up to World War II through the conflict, including depictions of the Holocaust, with filming in Auschwitz and the bombing of Hiroshima. The mammoth budget, a then-record $105 million, and colossal running time of Remembrance produced disappointing results, often credited with hastening the end of the truly long-form miniseries. Number 6. Holocaust, which ran from April 16th to 19th, 1978. A more concentrated and groundbreaking in its time, World War II drama put a human face on the Nazi extermination of Jews through the harrowing story of the Weiss family from Berlin. Dr. Josef, played by Fritz Weaver, with wife Berta, played by Rosemary Harris, and their offspring, Carl, played by James Woods, Rudy, played by Joseph Bottoms, and Anna, played by Blanche Baker. Law and Order's Michael Moriarty was a Nazi SS officer complicit in the atrocities, and a pre-stardom Meryl Streep played Carl's Christian wife, one of the few survivors. Though some criticized the series for commercializing the tragedy, Holocaust won the Emmy for Outstanding Limited Series, and with an audience of 120 million Americans watching some or all, it is credited for bringing the term Holocaust into the vernacular. Number 7 was Shogun, which played from September 15th to 19th, 1980. Exotic and entrancing, the 12-hour Shogun, from James Clavell's bestseller, made history as the first American TV series to be filmed entirely in Japan, with most of the native cast speaking Japanese, often without subtitles. All the better to depict the disorientation of shipwrecked English navigator John Blackthorne, played by Richard Chamberlain at his most heroic, who adapts to the 17th century alien culture with the help of a lovely interpreter, Yoko Shimada, and becomes a trusted ally of the embattled Lord Toranaga, played by Toshiro Mifune. A remake premiered on FX in February. Number 8 was East of Eden, which played from February 8th to 11th, 1981. Never to be confused with the 1955 film version starring James Dean, this melodramatic 8-hour twist on John Steinbeck's Cain and Abel allegory is best remembered as the lurid launching pad for former Bond girl Jane Seymour's career. As the murderous seductress Kathy Arnes, Seymour earned a Golden Globe and delicious notoriety for bedding two polar opposite brothers, Timothy Bottoms and Bruce Boxleitner, and creating conflict for twin brothers, Sam Bottoms and Hart Bochner, of The Next Generation. Kathy was a precursor to 80s soap opera vixens, including Dynasty's Alexis. Number 9 was Centennial. This played from October 1, 1978 to February 4, 1979. James A. Michener's gigantic historical sagas were meant for this miniseries format, none more successful than his Epic of the American West, covering two centuries of Colorado lore over 24 hours, airing in 12 installments. Everyone who was anyone was involved, including the ubiquitous Richard Chamberlain as Scottish trader Alexander McKeag, who, with French trapper Pasquinel, played by Robert Conrad, was among the first white settlers. The large cast of familiar TV faces included Gregory Harrison as the Mennonite Lovice Zent, Alex Karras as a German immigrant farmer, and Timothy Dalton as a British cattleman. Yellowstone fans would certainly enjoy seeing the modern-day storyline, with former fugitive David Jansen as a rancher doing battle with an unscrupulous developer played by Robert Vaughn. Number 10 was The Jewel in the Crown, which ran from December 16, 1984 to March 17, 1985. PBS and Masterpiece Theater anticipated the miniseries craze with multi-part British imports in the late 1960s and early 70s, including the Forsyth Saga, The Six Wives of Henry VIII, and Elizabeth R. But the anthology's greatest masterpiece yet to be equaled is the absorbing 14-chapter gem adapted from Paul Scott's The Raj Quartet, depicting the last years of British occupation in India and the social turmoil of the nation's independence movement, with conflicts between Hindus and Muslims. The catalyst for the drama is the rape of an English woman in the Bibigar Gardens, a metaphor for the cultural tensions in this fascinating land. Peggy Ashcroft led the incomparable ensemble cast. Number 11 was Jesus of Nazareth, playing from April 3rd to 10th in 1977. The Bible and its historical era have provided fodder for many a period miniseries, from the Old and New Testaments, with director Franco Zeffirelli's reverent treatment of the life of Jesus, the intensely blue-eyed Robert Powell, achieving instant icon status, attracting an estimated 90 million U.S. viewers when the second half aired on Easter Sunday. The international cast included Zeffirelli's former Juliet Olivia Hussey as Mary, with Anne Bancroft as Mary Magdalene, Deadwood's Ian McShane as Judas, Rod Steiger as Pontius Pilate, Peter Ustinov as Herod, and Michael York as John the Baptist. Number 12 was Eleanor and Franklin, which ran January 11th to 12th, 1976. The late Edward Herman will forever be associated with the legacy of our longest-serving president, mostly due to his indelible portrayal of the patrician politician Franklin Delano Roosevelt in this two-part biographical drama, co-starring Jane Alexander as his outspoken and devoted wife Eleanor. The Emmy-winning film and its 1977 sequel, Eleanor and Franklin, The White House Years, unfold as a series of flashbacks from Eleanor's perspective, detailing their personal and political challenges. Herman would play FDR again in the 1982 movie version of the musical Annie and provide his voice for Ken Burns' masterful 2014 documentary, The Roosevelts: An Intimate History. Number 13 was Salem's Lot, which played November 17th to 24th, 1979. The scene that continues to haunt any Stephen King fan's nightmares is simply silent and terrifying. A pale pajama-clad boy, face locked in a sinister grimace, hovers outside the upstairs bedroom window of his big brother, scratching at the pane until his unwitting sibling opens the window to let the undead boy in. The first of King's novels to be adapted for TV is still the scariest vampire story to ever appear on the small screen. Remade in 2004 and spoofed by The Simpsons in 1993, this is the version to watch. Number 14 was QB7, which played from April 29th to 30th, 1974. A pioneer of the miniseries genre, the two-night, at 6.5 hours, courtroom drama set the template for the trend that would follow. It was based on a popular novel by Leon Uris, author of Exodus, and dealt with the provocative subject matter, a libel trial involving a doctor who allegedly sterilized Jewish prisoners during the Holocaust, and featured a gallery of high-profile stars, including Ben Gazzara and Anthony Hopkins as the defendant and plaintiff, with Lee Remick and Leslie Caron as their love interests. QB7 took home 6 Emmys, including for actors Juliet Mills and Anthony Quayle in supporting roles. And finally, number 15, North and South, which ran from November 3rd to 10th, 1985. Hey, look, it's Elizabeth Taylor running an antebellum bordello. Stunt casting was just one of the camp elements of the Civil War-era potboiler adapted from John Jake's trilogy, followed by parts 2 and 3, subtitled Love and War and Heaven and Hell, reminding us that TV would be a poorer place without its unabashed guilty pleasures. North and South was constructed around the fractured friendship of Southerner Ori Maine, played by heartthrob Patrick Swayze, and Northerner George Hazard, played by James Reed, who end up on opposite sides of the Civil War. Hal Holbrook was Lincoln, Johnny Cash was abolitionist John Brown, and Terry Garber gave it her soap opera villainous all as mean girl Belle Ashton. Critics declared this fiddle-dee-don't, but audiences absolutely lapped it up. The next article by Jeff Pfeiffer is entitled Miniseries Mysteries. Which film icon had her final role in Scruples? What did John Wayne have to do with Lonesome Dove? Find these fun facts and more. A look back at the heyday of the limited series means revisiting important insider details about these well-remembered and loved programs. First, the Thornbirds led to real-life romance. During production of ABC's 1983 romantic miniseries drama, The Thornbirds, co-stars Rachel Ward and Brian Brown, whose characters were married in the story, really did fall in love and have been together ever since. They got hitched that year and have three children. How HBO got into the limited series game. The Far Pavilions, M.M. Kaye's epic novel about British Indian history, was adapted into a 5-hour, 3-part production for HBO, the first miniseries for the premium channel, which aired in 1984. The history of John Jake's historical miniseries. The most acclaimed TV miniseries based on John Jake's historical novels are North and South, 1985, Love and War, North and South, Book 2, 1986, and Heaven and Hell, North and South, Book 3, 1994, with their stories set in the lead up to, during, and the aftermath of the Civil War. But the first three novels of Jake's Kent Family Chronicles series, set during and just after the American Revolution, were also made into miniseries. The Bastard in 1978 starred Andrew Stevens and Olivia Hussey. The Rebels in 1979 featured Stevens and Don Johnson. And The Seekers in 1979 starred Randolph Mantooth and Edie Adams. These were all produced by Operation Prime Time, a group of independent television stations that wanted occasional alternatives to programming offered by the big three networks of the time. Scruples featured the last appearance of a legend. The 3-part 1980 miniseries, based on Judith Krantz's novel of an aristocratic Boston family, was led by then-relatively new stars Lindsay Wagner and Barry Bostwick. But the drama also featured the final screen appearance of an old-school Hollywood icon, Laura star Jean Tierney. Lonesome Dove had ties to the Duke. CBS' popular and acclaimed 6-hour miniseries Lonesome Dove aired in 4 parts from February 5th to 8th, 1989. The drama revived the Western and had some links to one of the greatest stars of that genre, John Wayne. Larry McMurtry based his 1985 novel Lonesome Dove on a screenplay he'd co-written with Peter Bogdanovich for a film that had been intended to star Wayne, James Stewart, and Henry Fonda. That project ultimately collapsed. In another tie-in, the miniseries was partially shot at the Alamo Village, a movie set originally created for Wayne's 1960 film, The Alamo. Another sci-fi legend adapted Ray Bradbury's The Martian Chronicles. Rock Hudson, Roddy McDowall, and Maria Schell starred in NBC's 3-part 1980 miniseries The Martian Chronicles, based on Bradbury's sci-fi masterwork. The series was written by masterful author Richard Matheson, famed for his novels, short stories, and other TV projects, including classic episodes of The Twilight Zone, like The Nightmare at 20,000 Feet. Lace provided one mother of a TV line. ABC's highly rated two-part soapy drama, Lace, which aired February 26 and 27, 1984, was cited 9 years later by TV Guide magazine in its issue celebrating 40 years of television. In that April 1993 publication, the magazine ranked Lily, played by Phoebe Cates, question, incidentally, which one of you bitches is my mother, as the best line in TV history. Holocaust miniseries sparked change in Germany. The term Holocaust, in reference to the genocide committed by Germany's Third Reich, was not common in the German language until the 1980s, after NBC's 1978 miniseries Holocaust aired to critical and popular success internationally. Following that, the term was even chosen as Word of the Year 1979 by the Society for German Language. Next, Robert Powell weighs in on the Jesus of Nazareth crucifixion scene. Franco Zeffirelli's powerful series, Jesus of Nazareth, aired April 3rd and 10th, Easter Sunday, 1977 on NBC. Among its mesmerizing highlights was Robert Powell's performance as the title figure. The actor took the role seriously enough that, prior to filming Christ's crucifixion, he starved himself on a diet of cheese for 12 days in order to look worn, as he told Movie Stars magazine in a May 1977 interview. Salem's Lot shed a lot of blood in theaters. Salem's Lot was based on Stephen King's vampire novel and was the first TV miniseries based on one of the horror master's works. The 183-minute original version, directed by Tobe Hooper of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre fame, aired over two nights in CBS, November 17th and 24th, 1979. For a theatrical release in Europe, Salem's Lot was condensed to a 112-minute feature. The golden age of the TV miniseries began in 1973. Many sources point to The Blue Knight, based on Joseph Wambaugh's novel, which aired November 11th through 14th, 1973 on NBC, as the first of what are now called miniseries. This set in motion what viewers would expect from increasingly more epic productions over the decade to come. How an Oscar-winning Sexiest Man got his start. Anyone watching the first episode of NBC's epic 12-part 1978-79 miniseries adaptation of James A. Michener's Centennial would have been forgiven for not paying much attention to one of the young extras in a village scene. That youngster happened to be a 17-year-old George Clooney, thanks to Centennial being filmed partly in the future star's hometown of Augusta, Kentucky. And that's it for this installment of the Magazine Rack. I've been reading the March edition of Remind Magazine. I'm Rick Gray. So long until next time.